The first one out of the gate triggered me a little bit, but I think I ended up agreeing with it.
I'm Jim Huffman, and this is If I Was Starting Today, a collection of conversations about half-baked startup ideas, growth tactics, and stories from founders, including my own journey as a business owner. All of the content is centered around one question: what would you do if you were starting today?
Okay, so I had Jesse Pugge on a while ago, and he's a guy that I've followed on Twitter for a while, and I've really enjoyed his content. We did the podcast, and it delivered, right? It was very good, and so I continue to follow him. And we're going to get into the tweet he did that triggered me a little bit, but I think in a good way. But first, let's explain who is this Jesse guy. So first, he is the former founder of Ampush, which is basically a paid ad agency that he sold for a massive exit. He has since started basically his own micro private equity fund, and he's all about bootstrapped ventures. And his goal is to build his fund or his portfolio of companies to over $1 billion. Since starting Gateway, he has launched Growth Assistant. He's launched Bloat. He's launched some SaaS tools, and he's really good at starting ideas, placing CEOs, and growing them. But he's just dropping knowledge bombs left and right. How long have you been following Jesse's stuff?
Since you initially shared it, and I did a bit more research, again, some of the things you mentioned, looking at the, I think, like 17 semi-controversial things that he did a tweet storm on, I was thinking about, like, what kind of life experience must someone have to really have these things? So I was just trying to associate his thoughts to his personal background and just trying to paint a picture, because some of these things really say a lot about the person. But yeah, I've been paying attention for no more than a few weeks, Jim. Definitely not as deep as you.
Yeah, because he's an ex kind of McKinsey guy, so has a very kind of strategic head on his shoulders, right? So what we're talking about today is this tweet storm he did in March, where it's, you know, 17 semi-controversial things, I believe. And so we'll kind of go back and forth on what you agree or don't agree with. But the first one out of the gate triggered me a little bit, but I think I ended up agreeing with it. So here's one of the, we're going to read every 17, or all 17, I think people would fall asleep, or maybe not because they're so good, but we'll just kind of cherry pick our favorites. But this is the one that got my attention. He said, where you went to college and your GPA do matter. Because I think it's very cool or in vogue to be like, I don't care where you went to school. I don't care about your GPA. Like, show me what you can do. Show up, work hard, and like, proof is in what you've done, not what your resume says, right? And I, as a guy that went to a state school in Kansas, I'm like, absolutely, I agree with that, right? It's like, I'll outwork any of those Ivy League nerds, right? And so I have that as a chip on my shoulder. I'm also very anti-MBA. As someone that used to work in investment banking and was about to go down that path, I remember studying for the GMAT and being like, why am I about to spend $200K, $150K on this education where I could just put that into a startup? And then I went down that alternate path. So I initially want to disagree with this. However, there are two outliers that make me agree. So one, when I was working at this startup in New York called The Take, the founder, he got an MBA at Columbia. So we always had this joking banner about, like, should you get an MBA or not get an MBA? And I'm very anti-MBA. And this guy came in as an intern, and he's like, hey, I'm about to go get my MBA at Harvard. I'd love to come work with you for a summer. And so Ty, to see if The Take, is like, got to interview this guy. There's no way you can hire him. He's about to get an MBA. So I interview this guy, and after 30 minutes, I fell in love. I was like, this is the smartest, most impressive person ever. I hired him as my intern. I ended up, when we'd have to do presentations, I'd have Brad just stand up and do it because he was so world-class. He has since got his MBA at Harvard. He's gone to work at Facebook and now has an AI startup that's raised millions of dollars. That, and then my other like best friend here in Seattle, like Stanford grad, high up at Amazon, just runs a different horsepower. So I'm like, crap, like those two names, they kind of back up the pedigree of people that I see. So unfortunately, I think I agree with that first one. What's your take on it?
You know, to be honest, when I first read this first pass, I thought similar to you. But I think kind of ripping through this like a lawyer was like a fine-tooth comb. I actually don't think we may be misreading this. It doesn't say where you went to college and your GPA matters for success or is important for success. It's just that it matters. So if you went to a state school, for example, you might have that chip on your shoulder, which forces you to work harder. So technically, from that perspective, it matters. And if you're that type of person, let's say went you're smart enough to get into one of the Ivy League schools, you're like one of the people you just described. So it matters, but it doesn't necessarily, he's not saying that it matters for success. It just, it just matters. It impacts the way you work, the kind of industry you select. So I'm taking more of the general scope of what he's saying here and saying that it matters in general. So I'm agreeing with it, but initial read, Jim, I was just like you, that kind of also triggered me because especially in this day and age, like, you know, traditional schooling is not necessarily the most important thing. Most people are, especially Gen Z, is skipping college at an alarming rate. So I was very much like you, but I think upon further reading and examination, that's not exactly what he's saying here.
Yeah, I am. It's funny. I have a buddy who also went to KU with me, and then he worked on Wall Street at a pretty prestigious fund, and one of like the big time investment guy came in. I won't say his name, but it's a name that everyone knows. And the guy was going around the table to all the new people at this very impressive fund. And his first question was like, where'd you go to school? And around the table, people were like, Princeton, Yale, Harvard. And then he gets to my friend and he goes, Kansas. And the guy's like, how did you get here? And my buddy was like so offended. But in a very witty response, he looked at him, he goes, on an airplane. And then the meeting just went on. But it's stuff like that that makes me cringe at the pedigree stuff that unfortunately
I agree. But yeah, what's the other one that you agree with or disagree with here?
Yeah, I'll go with another one. This one was number 7, and it was in leadership, candor, clarity, and brevity are way more important than intelligence and ideas. And as I was thinking through this, I was like, what does that really mean? And as I break it down, it's really about being a clear thinker and a clear communicator, right? Because it doesn't matter how smart you are, if you have the best idea, if you don't get people's attention, if you're too wordy or people don't get buy-in, it does not matter. There's something to be said. I think it's Simon Sinek. He has the phrase around leaders speak last. And I think you and I kind of have a knife fight for this in some meetings, as you and I both want to speak last. You're much better at it than I am. But there's something to be said about the person that talks the least, but when they say something in a concise way, it's so much more impactful than the chatty Kathy who's been rambling for so long where they've lost the attention of people. But that one, I really like that he prioritized brevity over intelligence and ideas.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm just like you. This is actually the one that stood out to me first. I got to the 7th one to agree for the first time. And a lot of the leaders that I look up to and the people whose thoughts I value the most tend to be those people with the clarity and brevity. I've noticed that clear and concise thinking, or I should say speech or even written word, is a reflection of clear thinking. So those people that have clarity of thought, that can like see the forest for the trees or not be distracted by, you know, everything else around that topic, have natural leadership. They have a gravitational pull for many people. Warren Buffett comes to mind. I remember I used to read Warren Buffett's annual reports when I was in high school, not because I wanted to go into finance.
Did you really?
Yeah, absolutely. I used to just sit down and read them, not because I wanted to go into finance then. I was actually still on the medical path. It was more the clarity of thinking was something I've never seen before. And I didn't understand most of the things he was talking about, but I was like, how the hell can someone take something so complicated and redistill it to the essence, right? There's literally no fat whatsoever in any of his speech or in his thinking. And I was like really drawn to that. And there are many other people like that I come across. I think Jordan Peterson's actually another very similar one. And the moment you hear them speak, you're like, you have to drop everything. And like, they just grab you because they have that clarity of thought and that naturally pulls people and they become leaders, whether they like it or not. So, yeah.
Yeah. I've been wondering, how do you become more articulate, have better clarity? And I think with that comes brevity. I love it when someone can take the most complex idea and distill it down so a five-year-old understands it in like two or three sentences. It's amazing. So my conclusion is, to become a better speaker, you need to become a better thinker. To become a better thinker, you need to become a clear writer. Because I think we have to put into paper. That's the big unlock. I heard Neil deGrasse Tyson say something that was really interesting, because he's so well spoken. And they're like, how are you so well spoken? What's your secret? He goes, every word that's coming out of my mouth right now, I have written down, thought through, and rehearsed. And I was like, wow. Well, what an interesting take on. I don't know if you've come to other conclusions, but I think it's that simple, is to write.
Absolutely. And here's the funny thing. Anyway, the last one that's missing is, to be a good writer, you have to be a good reader. So that's like, you read, then you write, then you think, then you speak. It's in that sequence. Absolutely. So totally agree. And I think everyone from Warren Buffett, literally everyone, has practiced those things. They've written it down so many times. They've distilled it to the essence. Naval Ravikant says this a lot as well. So a lot of his tweets that blow up, those are things he's written and edited and had people like stress test multiple times before you ever see it on Twitter. So same thing with Alex Hormozi, one other person I wanted to quickly throw in there.
I listen to a lot of books, well, a lot of podcasts, but trying to do more books. I'm doing The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel right now. And oh my gosh, he's such a good writer, such a clear thinker. That one's really fun. But it'd probably be more impactful if I was actually reading it rather than doing the audiobook. But I think something's getting through.
Yeah.
Nice. All right, let's see. Another one that I have here is number four. All the best companies are run as dictatorships, ideally benevolent ones. Most of the companies started by business influencers on this platform, which would be Twitter or X, will either fail or not become very large. And I do agree with this. I think with businesses, you have to have a clear visionary that sets the path in what is done. I think within a company, you can have different projects or initiatives that have other many dictators with it. But I think the opposite of this is decision by committee, where there's just a Frankenstein of ideas and it falls apart. And I have made that mistake before, and it is so painful, especially when you kind of have the solution in you and you should have just pulled it out. But for me, I didn't think that one was controversial. I was like, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, that's like when I was reading this, what came to mind is like the best companies are run as dictatorships, and like an obsession with taking something to the absolute extreme, right? It's like if you take Apple, for example, Steve Jobs really obsessing about design and that user experience, making it the best in the world. Amazon, it's customer service, Costco, it's savings for families. Nike is like helping you become your greatest self, or whatever their mission statement is. But whatever it is, it's like these great companies find something that they want to be the absolute best in, take it to the absolute extreme. And to do that, you definitely need some like dictatorial tendencies, or like the leaders to have that kind of tendency, because you're doing that to the detriment of everything else and trying to focus on an entire organization around that. So I can totally see how dictatorship is something that he might think the best companies are run as.
Yeah, that's supportive, like all of Walter Isaacson's biographies, I feel like, of the people he's profiling, then kind of dictators with what they've done.
Yeah.
Let's see, another one I had was, if you don't look back at yourself at yourself 2 to 3 years ago and cringe at what you did or said, you aren't growing fast enough. And it's funny, as I think through that, I think there are times where, oh my gosh, I cringe. If you go to the Wayback Machine and look at the Growth Hit website that I thought was just so pristine and amazing, I look at it now, I'm like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe we closed one deal on the back of that like horrific thing. But I also think it helps to show you have a growth mindset, and that you are growing or evolving in your frameworks or your perspective or views on things. Because I have absolutely shifted and changed my mind on a lot of things as I've gotten more perspective or reps on things. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I've been doing this exercise since like April of 2013, where I've been journaling almost on a daily basis, not always. And kind of going back and reading some of those old journal entries or anything like that from back in the day, This makes me cringe. And I'm talking back in the days, like literally a year ago, some of the things I think about prioritizing in those moments that felt very important to me, my worldview, it always shifts.
Yeah. What makes you cringe? Is it like what you're worried or focused on, or what you thought was the path you should be going down? Like any color on so, like what was off?
First one is definitely the path, right? So I'm like, the way I think about things is like a very, like, you're going to do this like six steps out is usually how I think. And the order of thinking there just absolutely doesn't make sense. When you look back, it's usually because you were looking at it from a perspective of like a misinformed perspective, sometimes also a very eager perspective. So you sequence events that just don't make sense together. Other things is just taking on multiple things and putting them in a time frame, or trying to accomplish them in a time frame that is absolutely not realistic. So I remember a few years ago, I wanted to learn languages, for example. So that was my hobby thing, something that I'll do on the side. And then I was just about to start jiu-jitsu. And there's just many things happening in my life that were sometimes conflicting. Did it make sense for the larger goal I was trying to achieve? And I was putting myself under very undue pressure. So just the thinking around that I thought was very poor and cringeworthy back in the day. This happens to me very regularly. So, yeah.
It's funny to go back and look at I'll look at what I journaled at over the past week. And just to see the themes was like, oh, wow, I've been really worried. It's like, why am I worrying about that thing that actually isn't an issue?
Yeah.
It's urgent, but doesn't matter, but you let it consume your emotions. And so that self-reflection has been helpful as well with journaling for me.
Yeah.
Let's see, I've got this one. Yeah, I love this one, actually. The best people can jump from the tiniest detail to the highest levels of strategy without skipping a beat. And I think this might be controversial because, I don't know, as you scale and grow and you're more top level, you need to not get into the details. Delegate that to team members. Focus on the high impact $1 million idea, not the lower level task. And I think, you know, there's in the Elon Musk biography, it talks about he'd be going back and forth from SpaceX to Tesla. He's on the Tesla assembly line. All of a sudden, he's like, stop. Why are there 6 bolts on the tire when there should be 5? And it would save us money. And like, oh, it's not possible. He's like, yes, it is possible. And they like did this quick study, ended up being proven right. And that's obviously an example of like zooming in into the tiniest detail. And I even think about that with Growth Hit, because I compare that to Growth Hit with the company that we've acquired, Neat. With Growth Hit, I do that really well. Not to pat myself on the back and take a victory lap for myself, but I'll go ahead and do that. But it's because it's my baby. I've been a part of every phase of this company where I can like be thinking high level, but then on a client call or on this call, like zoom in and be like, hey, why is this off? Whereas with Neat, I am not at that level with that company. And that kind of scares me. I do not know the tiny details on core aspects. And I actually think that's a blind spot. So I think if you don't have this, you need to understand why and if that blind spot is okay to have or not, because there's people that can cover your bases.
Yeah, I agree. The opposite, especially, that I don't say the worst people, but like the people in the organization that usually the liabilities are those that get lost in either the weeds or are like high-level thinkers that just don't know how to execute or deal with the details of the day-to-day. We've experienced this with people we've hired in the past at Growth It. And I find myself sometimes having to pull people out of the weeds and see the bigger picture of what we're trying to achieve. So you're totally right. I can see how lacking this is a skill. So the ability to go up and down as needed for context, it can be a liability if you don't have it in an organization, for sure.
Yeah, you're kind of hitting on like, it's like two mindsets, like the strategic mindset, but then the execution mindset, like being able to put on both of those hats and dive in and out is a superpower, right? To go from like player to coach or coach to player, whatever that is.
Absolutely. But yeah, I think we've definitely had a lot of experience with Growth on this. And I can agree. Yeah. The best people, I think the people that can even help move the organization forward tend to be those that are not just lost in the day-to-day, but can, you know, look at the bigger picture or what they're trying to achieve or what we're all trying to achieve. So I totally agree with this one.
Yeah.
One I actually want to quickly slip in, Jim, if you don't mind, is number 3, how service businesses can both scale and have a tremendous enterprise value. This is something that I initially didn't think. I thought like you know, service industries have natural, or I should say businesses have natural limits. You'd have to graduate to either SaaS or some other business model to get away from having to scale with people. But there are a ton of examples of businesses, especially now that we're thinking about acquisitions, that I've been doing more research on. And it's fascinating business models. Like, you can have service businesses that still operate like SaaS, have recurring revenue and all those other benefits of those other business models, but still it's men on the ground providing those services for a fixed cost. So I think that's something he's realizing as well. And he started with those other, I think that company that you mentioned earlier where he had an exit, and then he's realizing with Growth Assistant that you can build something that's 8 to 9 figures quite easily if you have solid systems in place and proven operators. So that's definitely a good call out.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that one up, because it's very easy to, like, not look down upon, but or like raise your nose to agencies or service-based businesses, especially when you're in and around the tech world where it's like, oh, you need to build a SaaS, an AI-enabled platform or whatever that would be. Absolutely, those are scalable. But just because your only leverage with an agency is growing on the back of people doesn't mean it's not an option. Because yeah, like you said, with productized services, man, those are really scalable. And in so many people I'm seeing being able to unlock an 8-figure agency and grow to something big. And even as we're growing, we're starting to see, wow, like, yes, it's not easy, but there are parts that this is really exciting as you can put systems in place. And I think 50% of businesses in the U.S. are service-based. I forget where I got that stat, but we'll just act like it's true. And it makes sense, right? And so, yeah, it's funny. I used to not like be embarrassed or ashamed, but I would like kind of put off like, oh yeah, I have this agency, but I'm trying to build this like SaaS or whatever. And now I don't think about that at all. I'm like, oh no, I'm very like proud of what we build and having this service-based business.
Absolutely. I think another one, if I can add that here, is the whole longer and deeper you go with personal growth work, the more you believe in the divine. I don't know if you're familiar with the hero's journey. So as you're going through evolving as a person, acquiring new skills, becoming better in all aspects of your life, you can't help but think of yourself on this longer journey. And I feel like when you kind of zoom out at that level, you feel like there's like greater forces at play, that you were, I wouldn't say a pawn on a larger game, but definitely like there are other forces outside your control that are impacting your journey, the impact you're having in the world, the relationships, the people that enter like spontaneously and in ways that you can't necessarily control, but have a huge outsized impact. So that's definitely something that stood out to me. Actually, one of the ones when I initially read it, I felt like I immediately knew what he was trying to say there. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that one definitely clicked with me, because especially as you like get into business and try and grow as a business owner or leader or executive, whatever that role is, it's not about having the tactics, the ideas, or the framework. Sure, those are great, but it's really about like your self-awareness and your own personal growth and how that parallels. And that's something, even in the entrepreneurship group that I'm in, there's a reason why 30% of the conversation is around personal, because that is such a huge impact of business. I think a lot of times it's easy to neglect that and be like, oh, just go to business school and read these books and you'll be on your way. And it's like, no, you're missing the boat there. That's not the core of it. And so, yeah, that one makes sense. And I think that's why there's a bigger movement for executive coaching that's going beyond just the X's and O's.
Absolutely. Is there another one that stood out to you that you agree with or disagree with?
No, I mean, I think we hit on them. There was one around like when you're young, hard work is the only thing that differentiates you. It's the only controllable differentiator. And there's so many examples. Like at one startup, I remember there was like a task no one wanted to do, required you to come in on Sundays, but I took it because I knew it meant I got to get one-on-one time with the CEO even on Sundays. And that quickly helps me kind of go to this alternative path to move up. But that only happened because I would do the crappy job no one wanted to do. It's not because, oh, Jim's the best suited to help build out our new CRM. It's like, does anyone want to do this? And so, yeah, I definitely agree with that one.
Totally. If you're playing the long game and you trust that your hard work will play off, or pay off, I should say, it's totally the way to go. The other one that you can't control, the other differentiator, is talent. but you have no control over that, whether you have it or not. So it's best not to plan with that in mind.
Well, cool, man. This is fun. Well, we're into another one on AI down the road as you and I are going to disrupt our own agency and talk about how someone should take down our agency with AI.
Yeah, absolutely.
This was fun. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you, Jim. Have a good one.
I'll give a few plugs. First, I send a weekly newsletter each Thursday featuring 5 articles or tools that have helped me. You can sign up for these weekly updates at jimwhuffman.com. Second, for anyone running a startup, if you need help growing your business, check out Growth Hit. Growth Hit serves as your external growth team. After working with over 100 startups and generating $250 million in sales for clients, Growth Hit has perfected a growth process that's hell-bent on driving ROI through rapid experiments. Plus, you'll get to work with yours truly. So if you want to work with a team that's worked with startups that have been funded by Andreessen Horowitz or featured on Shark Tank, then check out growthhit.com. And finally, I wrote a book called The Growth Marketer's Playbook that takes everything I've learned as a growth mentor for venture-backed startups, and I've distilled it down to 140 pages. So instead of hiring a growth team, save yourself some money, get the book, and you can just do it yourself. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I'd love to hear feedback. I'm on Twitter at Jim W. Huffman. Are you a business owner in desperate need of talent, but you have issues finding good people? Or worse, you find the talent, but then they want you to pay them double what you have budgeted. Yeah, I know the feeling. This is where Remotely Talents can help. Imagine having a personal HR team that finds you A-plus talent, and here's the best part. It costs you 40 or even 80% less than US employees. It's magic. So let's say you need help with setting up your social ads, your Google ads, email marketing, website development, customer service. Their team sources the top Ukrainian talent for you, and they deliver 3 top vetted candidates straight to your inbox. It's a one-time payment, and best yet, they give you a 60-day guarantee to ensure you're happy. Hey, if it doesn't work out, they'll find and replace the talent for free. Even better, 3% of all sales go to the Children's Hospital in Ukraine. At Growth Hit, our agency, we've hired 4 people from Ukraine. I am blown away by the level of work we're getting. So whether you need a virtual assistant or a creative director, give this a try. Go to remotelytalents.com right now and start a conversation. See if they can help you. You really have nothing to lose.